Blog Talk Radio.
We need to hear that one more time. One more time. Hold on.
This is the voice of Mocha 868, and you're listening to The Living Room, brought to you by El Nostro Reino Radio. Welcome to our kingdom.
Well, hello, everybody. This is JCA with Il Nostro Regno Radio, the living room. We are glad you all could join us today. I doubled down on Mocha's intro because she is not feeling well. I do not believe she's going to be joining us today, which is very unfortunate, but we do send all our love and all the healing wishes to her as she's going through what she's going through, and just tons of hugs and kisses to Mocha. You know, we all love her to death, and we just want to see her getting better. And with that, I want to just remind everybody that we have a nice little event that's going on. We have Prompt Your Partner. Sign up if you can, and we will go ahead and get you running on that. It is going to be, we're going to pick you a random partner, and what you're going to do is you're going to pick from our prompt file and give them a prompt to write about. So it's going to be very different and very unique thing, but it's going to be well worth it. Now, I know there's going to be a few people that wouldn't normally be here tonight, but they have let me know that they're not going to be here, so I'm glad on that, and we'll go ahead and play some of their audio in the future here. But what I'd like to do first is start us out with a little bit of Dylan, and this is called Nowhere's Bar by Unholy Bambini. There you go. And white with gray memories. Life is greener if wrists in a ring of fire. New faces at the stations overseas and pay respects with hymns by a choir. In a are broken bottles and ember ashes. A woman in a red and black dress had a diabolical smile. Nostalgic scent brought back flashes. She took a booth on the aisle. The devil sat on her shoulder while an angel sat on mine. Eyes torn away, and it was strange how she stole it with a shine. The menu. Maybe she was waiting for someone, but that wink was a benefit to join her venue. Poem. Ooh. Reminds me of the little devil with a blue dress on, but, you know, this time she was in a red and black dress, and I love the emotions that are intertwined within this thing that really set it off in a way that you know, it's kind of super cool. I really like the way that that he described her. He gave her a kind of a overall feel, an overall emotion, an overall picture, a caricature of who she is and who he is, and he knows that she's going to take advantage of him. And for some reason, I know that many of us have been in that type of situation where we have known that people are going to take advantage of us. And you know, I called one person my greatest mistake, but I knew it was going to be a mistake, and that was okay with me. But you know, just the way it turns out, we know that things are going to be bad, we know that things are going to be toxic, we know that things are going to tear into us, but we did decide to go in that direction anyways. And what Dylan put out here is quite a clever piece and spot on for what his message was saying. And I think it's fabulous. Well, what I'm going to do is, I know we got a few people, like I said, that aren't going to be here, and they said they're not going to be here, but I want to turn around and allow some audio that they had submitted for previous shows, and just kind of intertwine those into some of these reads and some of these dialogues that we're going to put in here. So here's our first one to Nine Hearts.
Darkling, Part 1, Love of an Artist, by Nine of Hearts. There's an onyx star in sterling silver that takes up your wedding ring spot. By your snow-coat skin, you belong to the winter. By your fealty to chaos, to the devil's final thought. I never can tell if you chant or you croon, while you read my scar tissue like braille, and it seems like you really make love to the moon. When you climax, eyes closed, like a banshee cries her wail. I know that it sinks in your tinted glass vase and your fountain pen fingertips, but not the enigma that bumps in your chest that would see a few rhymes have me exile from your lips. It kills me that I don't know the hue of your eyes. They just slip from blue into green, check in your notebook, like a creep, like a spy. But your handwriting mocks me like a court harlequin. And this new soul that looms from your pool cavern womb, bound to wear your raven hair. Is she heir to my name? Or a daughter to moon, evanescent as you, and elliptically blue, with those teeth that bear. My palm on your belly, triumph still in your grin, from that stone-cold deicide, where you left me with no one to pardon my sins, just the intravenous drips of your finest cyanide. To be continued.
And we're still waiting for part two to come out. So I checked his page. There is no part two yet. But when it comes out, we'll be sure to go ahead and get him working on that. Now, what I do like about this is it kind of ties into Dylan's poem at the beginning because, you know, it is that toxic relationship story, that story of having someone in your life that really is, that you know is going to hurt you, that knows it's going to cause problems. And you just feel their poison drip running through you, but it's so sweet and so tasty that you can't help move forward. And I think that that is an intense and incredible idea and concept. I want to welcome Marius to the group, to Il Nostro Regno. I've known Marius for a couple years now, I think, and what a fantastic addition to Il Nostro Regno. He is an incredible voice for poetry. And his adoration for his wife is just inspiring. So without further ado, let us debut Marius Alexandru in Il Nostro Regno. This is called Butterfly's Sonnet.
Sun, pour its light onto you to shine your flight, and sky donates all color for your wings. I start to cry at your majestic sight. Secretly, each tear of mine gently springs. Blue flowers tremble at your magic touch. The cardinals stop singing for a bit. Even for them, your beauty is too much. We all in awe, I sincerely admit. Where did you come from, nature noble prince? What wishes do you carry on your wings? Where did you hide all these beautiful things? Why did you leave the lands of queens and kings? I came to you to beautify your spring, to dance with flowers and with birds to sing.
To that one, that was just so elegant and beautiful. I love the way that he read that, the way that he wove the wording together. Just so gorgeous, so beautiful. He's got such an amazing way of bringing elegance into his poetry, and I've missed that voice. I've missed his style, and because it's uniquely him, and it's uniquely what he brings to the shows and to the poetry community, and I really love his ability to do that. Now, the overall structure of the poem was phenomenal. The way there is a narration between the writer and the actual subject of the beauty. And he almost makes you wonder, is he really talking about a butterfly, or is there more of a metaphorical presence within this poem? How much more is it? How much more does it contain? Does it capture within the realms of this poem as well? I love it, and bring us into a feeling of spring, into a feeling of hope, into a feeling of growth and new creation. And I love that as well. Really love the overall piece and Marius's style. So great job, Marius. Okay. I know that Titus messaged me a poem, and then he also put a poem in there. The poem he put in there, I did not see a SoundCloud, so I'm waiting to see if he gets back to me so I can upload another SoundCloud. But in the meantime, I do have the one he messaged me to begin with, so I am going to go ahead and play this little SoundCloud that. As I'm kind of excited to hear it. So here we go.
Still waters run deep. Inspired from the fairy tale Little Red Riding Hood by Charles Perrault, dated 17th century.
In trepidation is heard around the vaults, the labyrinth which holds a fabled beast, about the big bad wolf, an author's feast, through tales explaining man his many faults. Reckless hearts exist to admonish others, though little do we know such evil reign would spread fear it means to entertain the devil himself. Not a grandmother's. Agnation accepts in part the family trait would drive us siblings apart. The good, the awfully sad, but long-suffering brood the lake over which it stands to navigate. Still waters these, it pleases many an eye. Up here it is abundantly clear, the veneer it's so heavenly. Then welcome, my dear. To dream of such places is pie in the sky. A beautiful place, more to see with. Blessed are the mountains to each side. It reminds me what the world does hide. Secrets, oh how lucky are we to be alive. Then you must open your eyes a little. Given a stir, there is hardly a mention of disruption. The cloud kind of brittle. Long judder's egg on the surface tension. Ripples, my dear, is now looks the same without a worry. But a mean wolf will move sentiment. The object of the aim intending to get close. The water is still. We are still, but the world still moves.
You know what? He brings an elegance to this, even though there is kind of like an overlaying feeling of a struggle, an overlaying feeling of a struggle between good and evil, and how that goes with it, which is a common thing. We are still, but the world still moves. There's so much. I'm like. The elegance he brings in there, I get lost within his reading. But at the same time, when I look at this, I'm looking at reckless hearts exist to admonish others, though little do we know such evil reign would spread fear. It means to entertain the devil himself, not a grandmother's. Oh, that was such a clever statement when you're tying in the Little Red Riding Hood fairy tale, you know, the 17th century version by Charles Perrault. Titus always reaches back, and he could have lived in those days. He could have lived in days past and still fit in because of his versatility and his overall elegance and grace, all that he has to put forward. You know, if I read the bottom, yeah, and I agree. He is a romantic soul. He brings out such a I don't know how to describe it. It's such a calm to a story that does not have calm say to it. You know, there's so much of a history behind what Little Red Riding Hood portrays and the messages behind it, and the moral and the oh, what am I trying to think? The moral behind it, the story, the overall, what are you going to learn from it? And I love how Titus brings that forth and allows himself to be that vessel, that tool, which brings that out. Now, I like today that the fact that we're doing readings here so I can rest my voice a little bit. And next up, let's get a little Phil the Poet going. Cardboard Box.
This is a poem by Phil the Poet called Cardboard Box. I remember when I was a child, my imagination used to run wild. A cardboard box was my only inspiration, and with my mind, I made my own creation. The cardboard box would become anything, and few examples I shall bring. Are you ready to be adventurous? Good. But let me tell you that it will be dangerous. In a rocket ship traveling through space, trying to communicate with an alien race. What's happening? We seem to be under attack. Lock in the lasers. Too late. Pull back, pull back. Hoist the mainsail, my hearties. Come on, no time for your stupid word parties. Dare to cross me, I'll make you walk the plank. Why do you laugh? I tell you, this is no prank. Quick, to the den. They won't be able to catch us. If they do, they can kill us with just one touch. We are safe here because we are invisible. But we can't stay here. We need a miracle. The miracle that sprung forth would be Mum saying it's time for tea. Too much adventure, sleepy head, as Dad carries me off to bed. End poem.
Oh, I love the playfulness behind this. My mom would say, it's time for dinner, you know, or something to that effect. Oh, what you did here, Phil, is you brought in that touch of nostalgia, that touch of where we were as people when we were in our youth. You know, I always praise, you know, turning heroes to ghosts, taking our imagination of what it used to be and telling kids, you know, you should just grow up. But what is that? What is that? You know, you think that as kids we had a box and we turned the box into a spaceship, into a pirate ship, into something that would protect us. It was our escape room and all of that stuff, our panic room. Yet at the same time, got older, what did the box become? It became something that we break down and throw into the recyclables. Yet when we were kids, we could turn around and make it out to anything that we wanted it to be. It turned into our toy. It turned into our new home, our hideout, our fort. It was a getaway. It was an extension of our imaginations. And to have those type of imaginations run off with who we are, run off with our brains. That was part of us growing up. That was part of us living. That was part of us being that kid that, you know, sometimes we just needed to be. And I love that concept here of where you took this box, Bill, because I took it there too, that you started mentioning as soon as you mentioned cardboard box was the spaceship. And that was actually my first thought in my brain that came up is, yeah, we're taking off in a rocket ship, so you might as well just hang on, because it's going to all be part of our little journey. And I really like how you dwell on the imagination of people. You dwell on the imagination of us as who we used to be in our childhood. Wouldn't it be great to just grab a hold of that again and let our imaginations jump in now and then as we're adults? I think poetry itself allows us to do that. Our freedom in creating audio and stuff like that allows us to do that. And I love cut loose kind of acceptance within all that. And I love that. All right. I'm going to read the next one. This is from Irish Moon. Irish. Shorty. Good to see her put something in. And this is written 2 years ago, and this is called The Known and the Unknown. Every day I wake, my heart is heavy, yet it is empty. It hurts, yet is numb. My face is a mask in which hides all emotion, all fear, all thoughts. Yet this be nothing new. Rather, it has become the new normal. Many have cursed me for my silence, while others curse me for my being. Yet this no longer hurts me. Rather, I cling to it in hope for the pain. In hope I feel something, anything other than the silence, the numbness. No longer do I shed the pointless tears that forever go unnoticed. No longer do I curse him for leaving, for abandoning me to the cold, cruel wolves of society that prey on the weak and the innocent. No longer do I cry for him when the night terrors come to haunt my mind in the night. No longer do I flinch from memories that plague my mind. No longer do I shy away from the blade, from death. Rather, I embrace and laugh in the face of it. I welcome it. I welcome the darkness, the pain, for I am a broken soul. My heart no longer feels the sadness, the pain, sorrow, fear, happiness. It is cold and empty, devoid of all feeling. No longer do I speak, for I have nothing to say. If I did, would I be heard? Would they listen? Would they take heed to my words? Would they? Or would they overlook and ignore them? Would they still curse me if knew my thoughts? Would they change their tune? Would he still be here if they knew that their words were as knives piercing his skin, his heart? Would they care? Do they care? Poem. Wow. Now, if you know the story of Irish, the story of Shorty here, she was a twin, and she lost her brother, her twin. And a lot of what she wrote was intertwined with that situation, was intertwined with those concepts and those ideas that she had spinning around her head, you know, was her way of walking through what was going on. And this reminds me of a poem that I just wrote for a contest that was put on by Driscona. And the phrase in the contest is by Jay Sexton. It goes, "How strange is it to feel nothing and everything in equal measures?" That is life right there. That is what we go through. That is what we get hit hard with. And I think that Irish put that in an incredible way, and so much so that I want to actually read my poem. I call it Straight Jacket. And just to add on to kind of what Irish is saying, called Straight Jacket. "White comatose, I swing on the oak hitching post, dry rump roast the charcoal burnt toast, drowning in the brackish swells the cobalt coast. Numbness of a thousand pricking tattoo needles, cadaver devouring rhinoceros beetles, mosquitoes sucking on my olive skin. Is this how death feels? Carmine scratches, dripping wounds of the catches, the boiled jaw latches, no hands or the patching scratches patches. Gunmetal lies, snuff the regurgitated retries of salmon sheeple, hypnotized, zombified, mob numbers justified, but still the lies. Work stones for the bloodthirsty, throw blind ignorance for the herd mentality, grow magnesium torches for the stake wood glow, titanium pitchfork in tow with each bluish blow, death's crackling blow, life goes. Crimson crawled down the leather chest. Rest? No bed or cemetery rest. Detest the test, life and twists in the mess. Touch my stubble cheek. Punch is a sandpaper caress. I lick the sun's tangerine flame, my brain no pain, skull wall divide the jester insane. Like an axolotl from the sewer, faces are now the fewer, my spine is punctured with the skewer. Pain is now, I feel nothing at all." Yeah, but like I said, this is not to put a spotlight on myself or anything like this. This is just to highlight what Irish is saying, because a lot of the times it is about having this intense, phenomenal pain and then turning around and having no feeling at the same time, pain and numbness and everything all at once. It's like you're a living battery where you have a positive and a negative, and yet at the same time you have all this charge, yet when you're put down and never put inside of anything, that charge just sits and does nothing at all. Just sits and does nothing at all. I think that right there is a telling tale. Well, I see Deb out on the board. I know I saw Gonzo out there as well. Deb will be here shortly, so I'm going to throw in another one. I think we need to hear Mocha's voice, so let's put a little soap of the Mocha in there.
Matriarch of Voodoo by Mocha 868. Momotas Bahamensis, Queen of the Forest, perched atop exalted throne, is still life silhouette, camouflaged amongst an impressionist painting of crushed Larimar and flecks of Peridot. Deftly she dances the belly between burnished copper branches of soursop, rose, mango, and a sea of cocoa trees, remnants of a now slaveless plantation. Papa Bois is the only master here. Crisp Caribbean breeze ruffles her lapis lazuli crown, dipping and pooling between her valleys. The ginger lilies suspire calypso, and bending palms rustle with the vibration of djembe drums. The bamboo cathedral shudders in the chill of the evening. The sun, golden as a mame apple, descends. Rambutan eyes glow with all the mysticism of a sukuya, sailing like an Easter holiday kite through scorpion pepper skies. She is Empress of the Emerald City, sovereign of every sapling, matriarch of verdure. End poem.
Yeah, we, like I said, we just wish you all the best, Mocha, to get better soon. And it's always great to hear her voice. I love how she brings her culture from Trinidad and Tobago into this poem right here and this rite. And the overall recording that she puts behind it, I think, is phenomenal. I really like the way that she reads is just sensational. I remember when she first did that poem, she said she wanted to put a little more of her accent into it and go a little bit deeper into how they speak down in Trinidad. And I think she did a great job with that. I really love how she intertwined all of that with what she wrote and how she presented it. That's just absolutely fantastic. All right, now back to some of the newer stuff. Let us put in a little bit of Steve, and I'm kind of excited about this one.
This was written to the Pink Floyd song, Hey You. And the title is actual lyrics from the song. So I call this, And the Worms Ate Into His Brain, by Steven 76. Knee-hugging in the cold darkness of a sunny afternoon, tottering naked skin touching the rough fabric of the garage sale-bought chair. Dilated pupils focused on the silence, screaming from the rotary dial telephone. Ear vacuumed to the ice-covered metal siding, hearing the poached, breathy groan of the bargain barn box spring, and the only primrose path found, puddled upon a gelid limestone step. End poem.
Oh, my goodness. I felt like I was a picker there for a second. You know, I'm like, I looked at that, a garage sale bought chair, rotary dial telephone, you know, the the metal siding on a bargain box, barn box spring, you know, different things like that, I think were just fantastic imagery throughout. The song, Hey You. Yeah. I love Pink Floyd. I love how he intertwined Pink Floyd and hold on one second. All right, I'm going to go to this. Hey, you out there in the cold, getting lonely, getting old, can you feel me? Oh, God, I love me some Pink Floyd. You know, that was that's a type of music that I will, when I'm working alone at work, kind of like in if I'm in the warehouse area, I will blast me some Pink Floyd and allow that just to go through me. And the worms ate into his brain. There was almost a struggle there from the past to the present. And I look at that, me hugging in the cold darkness of a sunny afternoon, almost to the point of where someone is kind of like in that fetal position, you know, that the world is hitting around them, it's hurting around them. And I think that Steve did a fantastic job kind of bringing that point out. Just incredible, incredible the way he goes. All right, I see I've got a little bit of guest on the phone. Hello, Deb, how you doing?
Hey, Jay, how's it going?
Good. How does this sound? This is my new phone.
Crystal clear.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I'm glad that something worked well and is doing well for what I did. I got my bonus, and this is part of my bonus is me getting a new phone.
Well, that's a good thing. You deserve a new phone. Your card.
Yeah, my old one, the screen is kind of going out. I'm still using it a little bit right now because that's where I'm putting the links up. But talking, and I have my studio on my laptop. I'm talking on this phone, and I've got I'm doing the links on the other phone. So I'm working with three devices today just for the heck of it, seeing how well that works.
Yeah, no, everything's like smooth and clear, no distortions.
That's great. Well, I see you need to read and get running, and so I am going to go ahead and put your poem up next, and whenever you're ready.
Okay, thank you very much. This is called Weep, Wishing, and Bargaining, Yet Lamenting Still. Here we go. On that day, dark patches cracked the sky and stained the blue with steel gray. Fat rotating clouds poured bucket loads of rain, beating on the roof skylights like little fists knocking on doors. Thunder grumbled, rattling the walls like those polyester and resin balls that roll down the pine bowling alleys, then strike the hard rock maple wood pins. All the thundered vibrations rattled the glass panels as the lightning bolt crackles strobed neon onto the ceiling. The machine beeped till the nurse silenced it. She injected morphine for the pain. Lightning flashed between booms of thunder. We paced and prayed, paced and sobbed, sobbed and wished and prayed. 13 of us circled her bed, whispering in her ear, prayed, weeping goodbyes, prayed, spilling wet elegies on her nightgown. My mother died. End poem.
Yeah, this is it's one of those pieces that is really hard. No matter, it's kind of a surreal moment when, you know, you pray, you do everything you can, you have these thoughts in your head, these hopes in your head, and then it just keeps on going on, and you just can't stop situations when you want situations to stop. I've been there, felt that. I've walked through these situations on more than one occasion, and it is a hard, hard, you know, fact. It's just something that we can't stop time. No matter how much we try, and no matter how much we want to, we just can't stop time. And it's in those times that really turn around, and kind of we when it all happens, we just sit there wondering what just happened, even though we knew it was going to happen anyways. So I think that what you painted here is a very powerful example of that.
It's such chaos in your body when your brain knows what's about to happen any minute, but your heart just holds on for a miracle or an extra moment. And then you have the conflict of reminding yourself that how badly they're suffering and that she needs mercy. And it's really, really hard conflict to deal with. And you're right, it never goes away.
Yeah, it's something difficult to hold on to, and to, you know, it is that moment that you're like, okay, what's going on here? I know what's going on, but it's like I can't really get my mind around what's really happening. You know, we have things that have touched us our whole lives, people who have walked through our whole lives, and suddenly the walk is over. And it's like, what just happened? And it's like our minds can't fully get around the concept of not having that person there anymore. I love how you put it at the end, because it says, spilling wet elegies on her nightgown, but then my mother died. It's like, you knew it was going to happen, but it was almost like you didn't think it was going to happen. It's kind of almost like a double negative in your mind. It's like, what just happened? What just happened, even though I know what happened?
Exactly.
Our minds,
yeah,
work in such odd ways.
And sadly, I know you know that the world's never the same once your mom dies, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I've been in the room holding someone's hand more than once when they died, and the entire room changes. You can feel them leave. It's a really, really hard thing, and anyone who's not been sitting there at that exact moment won't understand until they are. It really does change everything.
No, you're right. It really does. And it is a difficult time because you're really not sure. Like I said, it's so freaking hard to describe because it's like you don't expect it to happen, yet you know it's going to happen, and it happens, and then you still don't know if it just happened. It's surreal.
Indeed. And it feels like in the first seconds, it feels like if you let the reality in, that's it. And then it takes a while to be able to concentrate on all the happy things through a lifetime rather than those last months. And both of the people that I was sitting with at the time died from cancer. So they were both suffering really badly until that moment. So there's a conflict between knowing that they are out of pain, but knowing you'll never get to spend time with them again, you know?
I understand that. I understand that. I lost my brother to cancer, and he was like 54 at the time. So it's like completely understand, you know. He's like, when my dad died, he put the family on his back and was carrying the family there for a while until all of a sudden he came down with cancer. And when you have someone who's carrying the family, that all of a sudden he's not going to be there, he's not going to be able to carry, where do you take it from there?
Right.
Where do you go from there?
Cancer, man.
I think that's...
My aunt was only 47, and my mom was barely 65. And then you have an uncle in the 50s. It's definitely an equal opportunity thief, that cancer.
It really is. It really is. I think death itself is such an equal opportunity thing, because it would take anybody at any time, and you're never guaranteed tomorrow.
That's why it's so important to make sure people know how you feel and be careful what your last words to them might be. Like, I try to always leave everyone with love and respect, because it might be the last thing I ever say to you.
Yep.
Learned it the hard way.
I understand what you're saying. Well, I'm going to try to play a little something that's fun here. I'm not going to stay on much longer. I know, like I said, Mocha's not feeling well, so just sending out get well wishes to her and love and hugs and everything like that out there where she's at. And hopefully she'll get better. What's that?
I said, feel better, doll.
Yes. So I'm playing a few things that I'm gonna have fun with. So I see here. I don't know what this recording is. I don't know if you want to stick around for a little Lawrence 67. I think I recorded something for him. Trust me, I'm not sure what it is or where it is, but. If you want to stick around for this, you can. If you have to go, you can go.
I do have to go, but I have you plugged in. I'm listening to you on the link. So I'll hear it there.
All right. Do you want to plug any shows coming up?
Tomorrow is the Man Cave with Stephen and Hatter at from 11 to 12. And they usually just sit around and gab and have a good time. So if you have a free minute, just call and say hi to them. And Saturday, the topic is gold at 10 p.m. Eastern. And on Monday, my topic for Personal Prop Monday is a bridge over troubled waters. So there's the next three. Thanks a lot, Jay.
You're hitting one of my favorite songs.
Is it? Well, maybe you might.
I can reach over troubled waters.
Well, there's some really gorgeous. You could do a parody and sing for us. But yeah, no, there's some really beautiful bridges to choose from, and take it wherever
That's
it leads
great.
You.
I tell
you
what. If you
have any time, you can record it with your brand new phone.
Where I am here, I have, I want to say we have a love, Locks of Love Bridge, you know, Love Lock Bridge. Are you
oh,
familiar
wow.
with those?
I know about the one in Paris.
Yeah, we have one here where I'm at in Wisconsin. We also have several covered bridges. And we also have a bridge here that's on the National Register of Historical Places. So we
wow.
have...
Wow. Are you close enough to any
bridges.
One of those to snap a photo?
I have snapped photos in the past, but I can definitely, especially with the new phone.
Well,
the
you're more than welcome to
incredible.
Use your own pitch photo if you snap one
yep.
of those photos and use that instead.
Oh, absolutely,
that would be,
I can.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yep, I have actually, I know I've snapped photos before of these bridges, but definitely something that is cool. You know, the bridges are a big thing here, especially when we got a trout stream that runs right through the downtown. So they built a bunch of trails, plus we're the bicycle capital of the United States. So there's bike trails everywhere.
So cool.
All right, Deb, you take care. I'm going to go ahead and play this little something. We're going to have a little fun with Lawrence 67 here.
All right, Jay. Love and respect.
Yep.
Here, fishy, fishy, from Lawrence 67. Here, fishy, fishy, when I go fishing, something always smells fishy. Now, it could be because I don't like fishing. Why? Because fish are sure fishy, and they smell fishy. And fishy fish are not to be trusted. They act like they want your worm, coming right up to my bobber first, then coyly swimming past my big, fat, scrumptious earthworm dangling and squirming for its dear life, only to pass as if it's not interested in the luscious morsel, then coming back and again swimming by and scaring the bejeebies out of my poor worm, coming so close, even opening its jaws, only to turn around and take off towards deeper waters, leaving me and my now heart-attacked worm just sitting there wondering why it came for in the first place, just to get my adrenaline going so hard that I get the sweats, and not to mention my poor now terrorized worm. So I take the little feller off the hook and gingerly place the traumatized little worm in the shallow water and give him his well-deserved freedom. Go swim away, little guy, you're free. Free at last. Thank God Almighty, you're free at last. When all of a sudden, bam, kerplat, from out of the depths of hell, the big catfish appears, opens its large mouth jaws, flies 2 feet out of the water in the air with a booming thunderous clap, like an Olympic swimmer missing his 2.5 flips with an inverted jackknife into a full belly flop, and away like a torpedo into the waters with my poor worm hanging halfway out of the fish's hungry jaws. And I just stare in disbelief as the fishy fish makes one last pass in front of my eyes, and I pick up my pole and tackle box once again, fishless and smelling like fish. I drive the 2 hours back home thinking to myself, man, fish are sure fishy.
And that was a fish tale of fishiness from our good friend, fish friend, Lawrence 67. I couldn't help myself. I was looking at Lawrence 67 mostly awesome and excited to do more stuff and present more stuff of Lawrence. As we're going to be working some stuff out here as well. I'm really excited about that. Let's see, what do I got next? And Gonzo, we will think of something. Don't worry about that. All right, I'm going to go ahead and I guess I'm going to read Titus's poem, The Hay Wain. And it looks like it's from a painting called The Hay Wain. Love it. And it's written in a Shakespearean sonnet. And hopefully he'll get that. And here it goes, The Hay Wain. Around the midst of noon, the hay wain led. The neap tide of the stour shall make its way. The Irish setter who once hath them sped shall first then firmly pledge alert each day. The hay wain with its widened eye spouse among phalagi, phigalis, where the washer ooze. Dispersion she aerates with soothing douse, that life maintains the balance, win or lose. The right field of a scene, the dirge who might have given off his musings, may have done. A dowinger who might show how so slight may seem so very blurred, a hay wain shun. Lord rings to Suffolk's stour, the river has declined, this be aigret shall have outlast. The words. I'm going to go line six, Phigalis, in order of flowering plants, including the best known trees. Line nine, a dirge who stands, the angel of death. Line 14, aigret, a plumage to honor the said artist. It is a volta in itself, Charles Cuthbertson. So freaking gorgeous. The way that everything is blended in there. I love this poem all together and all around. And I guess I did. And I really love the way that he writes. It's just so incredibly beautiful, so incredibly wonderful. And I just think it's gorgeous, gorgeous the way that he writes this and the way that he brings his poetry to us in such elegance and such amazing ways. The wording is phenomenal. And the structure. Do I have to go on about his structure? Sonnets, no matter what anybody says, they're not the easiest things in the world. They're not, all straight up cut and dry. Especially when you're writing a sonnet about something so far in the past, when you're taking that step back. And the painting that he put, The Hay Wain by John Constable, 1821, to be able to step right into that painting and to write that sonnet based out the painting. and then turn around and write something like that. Just beautiful, beautiful. All right, we're going to go with another poem. And this is, I'm going to read one of mine, and then we're going to finish up with Gonzo. And going to call it a show after that. So this poem right here, I was honored to have chosen as my latest front page pick for All Poetry. And I just love how this turned out. So I wanted to go ahead and share this. It's called Mockingbirds Sing Hallelujah. Breath thieves the baritone. Clock click from our sunflower timepiece hands. You, like the satin cappuccino orchid, I doodle over my gooseberry lips in the crystal seraphic name. It sings the wintergreen days of the wisps and the weeds. Be not the flash and clap of the golden lightning flash smack, but be the rumble and rattle of the landslide aftershocks that groan in the emerald vine brain. Drizzle to the blue bonnet rain as I sniff the honey drip jasmine on the treasure cove neck nape, sailing on the green treetops of the sunset mangoes and the creamy avocados. Cracked bones pop, darken sunset tangoes, saunter, scrape, slap, queen, no whimper snatches the midnight dahlia. From the thirsty blind soldier, his hands splashed the kawaii roots, watering with the waters of 100 Mayan cenotes. So if the night houses the gates of Valhalla, eyes never reach the flames of dawn, death's knock is vocal in the wind's hiss. Listen to the 1,000 mockingbirds singing hallelujah in chords on altars, walking us on golden bricks somewhere called home. And like I said, I really love this. The picture that I used was from an artist by the name of Boris Indrikov, and it was a photo prompt. Indrikov is spelled Indrikov. I suggest that people check out Boris's work. Fantastic. It's phenomenal the way that all of that is brought together. And it was a true inspiration for that piece, and I really appreciate everything about that. Now, I think we're going to go ahead and play one more audio here. And we're going to end the show on that. Let me make sure that I got everybody. That is correct. All right. We're going to end the show with a little Gonzo here, folks. So. Gonzo, I got to admit, this is one of the greatest poem titles I have ever heard. So let's listen to Gonzo with Prescription Strength Reality.
Hey, pal, what's wrong?
I'm 46, and I just gave up my career as a software engineer to become a professional BMX rider.
How long have you been riding?
About 13 minutes, and it really burns me that no one has faith in me to do it. My wife is mad we can't pay the bills, but I keep telling her, honey, my dreams are priceless to me.
What are her dreams?
I don't know, something about stable. maybe a jockey or glue factory worker, I don't know. When people talk to me, I just think about what my acceptance speech would be at the Oscars after they write the greatest spy espionage film of all time based on my life. I thank everyone, but secretly deep down, I know it's based on me, so they should be thanking me.
You sound like you're wound up and anxious.
Yeah, it's been 8 seconds since I changed my dream to become the world's first tightrope walking exotic dancer. I'd call my act the Angle of the Dangle, and no one is giving up their lives to support me and my ambitions. Why?
Sounds like we have the drug for you. Pharmacists have been struggling for decades to help treat the anxieties and the depressions of the entitled. After decades of research, our cure has been found. It's called Reality. The drug combines two core ingredients. First, we start with a dash of real life and combine it with our own in-house blend of sanity, mashed together into one bite-sized capsule. Reality will shock your system back into place.
Oh God, my marriage is failing and my kids hate me. I feel worse. How do I fix it?
Oh, that? Oh no, we don't have a pill for that. Bye! Ask your doctor what a dose of reality could do for you. Side effects of reality may include anxiety, depression, loss of appetite, increased appetite, sleep too little, sleeping too much, wanting drugs, wasting time, jealousy, rage, paranoia, suicidal thoughts, outperforming others, happiness, regret, sadness, temporary numbness of the inner colon, hair loss, diarrhea, unwanted pregnancy, gene fetus, and in some extreme cases, success. Please do not take reality of pregnant with spawn of Satan on the second coming of Christ or believe the radio is stealing your cereal. Oh, reality. Doesn't it make you just want to go?
God. Oh, side effects of reality may include anxiety, depression, loss of appetite, increased appetite, sleep too little, sleep too much, wanting drugs, wasting time, jealousy, rage, paranoia, suicidal thoughts, thoughts of harming others, happiness, regret, sadness, temporary numbness of the inner colon, hair loss, diarrhea, unwanted pregnancy, cheating spouse, and in some extreme cases, success. Then this is my favorite. Please do not take reality of pregnant with the spawn of Satan or the second coming of Christ or believe the radio is stealing your cereal. Oh my God. Oh, that was brilliant. That was absolutely freaking brilliant. Never stop, Gonzo. Never stop what you're doing. Oh my God. Gosh, I do. I don't want reality. Thank you, folks. I'm happy where I'm at. I'll live life like I'm where I'm at and everything like that. So no reality for me. I'll pass. Gosh, this is great. Oh my God, I can't wait. I can't wait for more people to hear that one. That is a must listen to, and it's just genius. Absolutely freaking genius. Amazing job there, Gonzo. Your brain is like this carnival. It's like this absolute joyride at a fair. It's like, gosh, it's as if I was to go on a roller coaster day, which I can't, and I come off and I'd have these kind of this feeling of fingers on my brain and not knowing where I am for a few days. I think he did such a brilliant job with this. Bravo, bravo. Give you a clap, round of applause. Fan-freaking-tastic. Never stop, never stop, never stop. And with that, folks, I am going to call it a day. Once again, we wishing my dear partner in crime, Mocha, a speedy recovery, and just hugs, kisses and all the healing that we have within ourselves, sending her way to see her get better soon. And anybody else who may be suffering out there, we should also send some stiff healing to you guys. Send all of our love out to all, every country who listens in to us and all the people. Thanks, Steve, for being out on the board. Gonzo for being out on the board. Thanks, Deb, for calling. Once again, thank Mocha for all that she does. This place would not be this place without her. And just each and every one of you that keeps us all in check and keeps us all going, we really appreciate you. And we're looking for bigger and greater things in the future. And don't forget the Prompt Your Partner little challenge we have going on right now. So give that a go. And thank you all. And we love you all. And see you again next week.
Thank you.